Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for being patient, and welcome to tonight's edition of the program. This is the trade deadline special for us because we're too lazy to do this on Monday. I'm your host, Chris Wassel, and joining me tonight is a man who needs no introduction because he's actually done this much longer than I have, which means he's seen more than I have, and he's also seen a lot more of the crazy NHL trade deadline than anybody ever could. And that is none other than the man behind Spectre's Hockey, Lyle Richardson. Good evening, Lyle.
Good evening, Chris. How are you this evening?
I am doing very good. Enjoying a nice, wonderfully wet Sunday night, which seems to be a theme lately here on the East Coast, where it just keeps raining over and over. We're not flooding or anything. We're just watching the water slowly come down every day. All right, folks, it's going to be sunny tomorrow. I mean, I can't lie about it. And that must mean one thing. Since the sun is going to come out tomorrow, that must mean the trade deadline is going to happen. And it is. 3 p.m. tomorrow or slightly later, as I often like to joke about, just because, well, you know, the fax gets jammed. The GM, you know, the GM accidentally poured water on the original fax. These are things that have actually happened during trade deadlines. The intern unplugged the fax. The trade call was supposed to go through, but the connection got screwed up. That's another thing that has actually happened. That was actually 2009 was when all of a sudden there were trades going through at 5:30 Eastern time because they had a mishap around 3 o'clock where literally the NHL office's phones got jammed, and unfortunately they had what you would call a total shutdown. So they had to wait an hour, get everything back up, and then realize there were voice messages. When technology goes bad, it does go bad. So the good thing for everybody, it has actually been a rather active trade deadline. It doesn't seem like it because it's been so quiet. We've hit the quiet period a good bit earlier than normal, in a way, and in a way not. And the main reason for that is the trade deadline's on Monday. It's not on a Wednesday like people seem to be so conditioned to. So you add in the weekend, people are getting a little, you know, they get a little rambunctious, they get a little better, and you realize we just want the thing to start. Well, it has. it's gotten off to a crazy flying start. We've had trades that had to be reworked. We've had a few three-team trades, which is something that's not very commonplace. No, we've had the double conditional pick trade. It seems like there's one of those every other year or so. Thank you, Philly and Detroit, for filling the quota in the box. We have the Chicago Blackhawks selling, which, and the Rangers for that matter, which you don't expect those to. I can't remember the last time, Lyle, there were Detroit, Chicago, and the Rangers were all selling at the trade deadline.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's a long. That would I can't listen for as long as I've been covering the trade deadlines going back to 1999, and yeah, not those three teams all at the same time. It used to be Chicago and sometimes the Rangers, you know. But even then it always usually was the Rangers buying, going for broke, and there's only, you know, so yeah, this is a first for me with those three original six clubs all selling at the same time.
And 04 was a mild sell for the Rangers.
Yes.
And Detroit, because they were close, whereas Chicago, it was just like they had just given up. So, I mean, that's the closest I can remember to the three teams selling. And
yeah, but not on the scale we're
not on this level
seeing this year, no. Yeah,
and that's the thing that people often have to realize. So, all right, simply put, for everybody, some of the bigger names that have moved so far, Michael Grabner, That would be mm-hmm. one of them, or at least one of them.
That was, I think, really the first significant one of the week to go. You know, I think that one was the domino, really, that started everything going, because Grabner, while not a big name, nevertheless, he was on the top 10 of pretty much everybody's list of notable trade candidates. And it's because he's, you know, a fast winger, decent scoring touch, kills penalties, you know, and a very affordable cap hit. Going to the Devils, hey, you know, nice affordable pickup there. But that to me, I thought, felt was kind of the real domino that set everything in motion. You know, you could say, well, what about the Dion Phaneuf trade the week before? That was the week before, and quite frankly, that didn't really have any bearing on the market at all. It really didn't.
Yeah.
Once the Grabner trade hit, that's when things started to go into motion.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little side volley. It's like, oh, that's a cute trade, but that's not the main event.
Mm-hmm.
This is the start of the main event. And then,
yep.
And the nice part of it all is this was legitimately the first trade between the Devils and Rangers in NHL
mm-hmm.
in both their history.
Yes, indeed.
You know, sorry for those ones remembering the classic Barry Beck trade. From
Doesn't count. Not the same thing.
Yeah, I've actually managed to keep in touch with Barry every so often from the wonderful land of Hong Kong, and it's quite amusing. You know, he's like, yeah, you know, I was sort of the first, but not really. And,
yeah.
But it's an interesting trade. Obviously, it's something that New Jersey needed, because 5-on-5 scoring had literally
mm-hmm.
just dipped to ridiculously low levels, and it
yeah.
felt like it was starting to feel like last year all over again, where you basically were praying that Taylor Hall would carry the Devils to a victory, and
yeah.
somehow the defense and goaltending would just hold up enough.
Well, this is a move too that I felt that this is, you know, Ray Shiro deciding, yeah, now's the time. You know, he didn't do it last year because he was very adamant that no, we're getting better, but we're not there yet. But this year, it's, you know, come on, you're holding on to the playoff spot. It's just like, yeah, no, you know, now we go for it. But he didn't do it in a crazy way. You know what I mean? He didn't overbid. He didn't chase, you know, overpay to bring in a really big name. He addressed a need in an affordable way. And that's what a smart GM does. Because you got to remember, your Devils, they're still in the rebuilding process. They're coming out of it. You know what I mean? They're coming out of the rebuilding process, but they're not quite done yet. So, yeah, this was a good move by Shiro, though. This was the time to make kind of that move that says, hey, yeah, I want to help my team clinch a playoff spot. And this is a guy who fits in both with his assets as well as, you know, cost, both in terms of cap hit and returns. So, yeah, I like that deal for the Devils. I thought that was a good move. I think it should really help them nail down that playoff spot.
And later on this show, when we get into what could happen to tomorrow, you know, we'll get into if Shiro stays, you know, this is it, or there's something else. But we want to go through basically the five or six big trades, because the little ones are cute, but they don't pay our bills, sadly. But we'll touch on some of them, just because they do have some ramifications, at least for tomorrow. Now, of course, because Pittsburgh did not get Michael Grabner, like certain Pittsburgh sites had mentioned prominently. We won't mention which ones, and we won't mention which radio host, big radio host in Pittsburgh, was absolutely sure that Michael Grabner was going to Pittsburgh for a song and a dance, and maybe a first-round pick. Not quite. But the Penguins did get somebody else that was, you know, fit in sort of a need, and, you know, there'll be some debate on this as the, you know, rest of the season goes on, as to whether they really needed to do this. But the Penguins, Senators, and Golden Knights decided to have a nice powwow, basically, and trade a whole bunch of people, prospects, and picks. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
To break this down in nice terms, Derek Brassard took the nice little red eye from Ottawa to Pittsburgh. Ian Cole went from Pittsburgh to Ottawa for now. Prospect Phil Gustafson went from Pittsburgh to Ottawa. Pittsburgh got a 2018 third-round pick. They also got Tobias Lindbergh, ultimately, from Vegas. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Circle back. Ottawa got a first-round 2018 and a third-round 2019 from Pittsburgh, which means they're getting a second and a fourth. Nobody will tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Vegas did get known friend of Erik Karlsson, Ryan Reeves, and what is essentially what was Vancouver's fourth-round pick in 2018. Now they have another nice middle-round pick, and they get the extra added bonus of paying $2 million of Derek Brassard's salary. So they will be getting 40% of that wonderful salary, all for what amounts to be a third-line center who can't play the penalty kill, and at least early on, and Penguin fans better pray like the Dickens, doesn't mesh really well with Phil Kessel right now. You hope that this is only just a one-game fluke, because some of these trades, unfortunately, you get like you either get somebody that comes in like a house of fire and they get really hot, or they go into this cold sort of abyss for a week or two, and it doesn't necessarily affect the entire team, but it affects that particular line, unfortunately.
Well, I think this is going to help.
It'll work out.
Oh, of course it will. I mean, you know, it's his first game in, you're trying to adjust. You know, sometimes chemistry takes a little bit of time to establish, and it depends on certain players. But listen, I mean, you know, I definitely think that the Penguins, they're definitely much better down the middle now than they were before they made this deal.
Right.
You know, they really are. I mean, now you can slide Riley Sheahan down to the fourth line. You know, Brassard, listen, he's a proven two-way center. You know, and especially brings it during the playoffs as well. He has something like 55 points in 78 playoff games, so he's a proven playoff performer. You know, a good two-way guy. And, you know, as I said, I like the fact that, you know, Jim Rutherford was willing to go for it again, you know? I mean, the team's playing great. This wasn't a panic move by any stretch of the imagination, but he was willing to go for it again, and God knows he was willing to get creative to make it done. As I told you before the show started, Chris, I just like the fact that it's Vegas that picks up 40% of Brassard's cap hit. That was brilliant. was brilliant.
Yeah, I give him points for that. That is,
McPhee, you know, this must be one of these things that's sort of like almost like an unwritten, you know, future consideration, you owe me Jimmy Rutherford move here. I'm not quite sure what the whole dealy boob with that was to make that worth it, but hey, what the hell, right? You know.
Now,
you get Ryan Reeves out of the deal, so.
now here's the fun side story in this. And again, when you hear these, you often don't know how true it is, but at least this one might have some legs. Yeah, there's a possibility that Vegas really might have done this just to block Winnipeg from.
I heard that too.
Trip.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It is
that,
possible.
That one's at least more plausible than some of the other near Winnipeg deals that I heard that, you know, were supposedly either blocked or they just went with another team today alone.
Yeah.
That was two other trades just today. That Winnipeg apparently had the Wile E. Coyote effect, where they were so close and then the Acme wrecking ball came and swung and hit him halfway across the Grand Canyon. It's just something where it's like, okay, but this one had at least some plausibility to it.
Well, it sounds plausible anyway.
It sounds
plausible.
And it is George McPhee, who literally is afraid of Pittsburgh in every way, shape, and form.
Mm-hmm.
So in some way, it does kind of make sense. It's like, well, I'd rather play Pittsburgh now than get eliminated early. And I wish I was kidding, but that almost is something that you sit there and go, okay, this makes some sense. Now, like Lyle and I were mentioning before the show, the original trade was pending league call at 1:30.
Yeah.
It was just about 9:30, 9:35.
Yeah.
When the trade two, if you will, was finally approved and going towards the, you know, the trade call process and everything. So that's 8 hours of people just hanging on their computer. I wish I was kidding, because I could see Pittsburgh beat writers just hanging near their computers. And I know even Brian Metzer was just sitting there at 5 o'clock going, would you just complete the trade already? So, yes, I have a confession to make. I did do it, Lyle. I did pull out the old Caddyshack while we're waiting. I just had to put it out there, and people are just like, you're a prick. You really are. But I mean, it's just sometimes this happens, and this happened during trade deadlines in the past, where the classic example is of one that didn't happen was the Marion Hossa of the Montreal trade, which lesser scale as far as hours. They had made an earlier trade around 9:30, 10 o'clock that morning to trade Cristobal Huey,
yeah.
They could free up what they had to. And they had a trade at approximately after 10 a.m. that they just could never get an agreement on.
Mm-hmm.
And by 2:55, Atlanta had enough, and they traded them to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you know, about almost 5 hours. But this obviously is a little bit of a different situation, but still the hours of people sitting there waiting, and, you know, they didn't have these fancy laptops and equipment like they do now. So, needless to say, updates were a little more, wasn't as rapid as they are now.
No. Yeah. But, you know, as I said, though, earlier, I mean, I give them points for creativity. I mean, in this, as I said to you earlier, I mean, this is the third three-way trade that we've had this season. I mean, and the last one that we had before that, God, was, I think, 4 years before. So, you know, they're starting to get more creative now, the general managers. You know, they're finding ways to make things work, to make the trade certainly more interesting. But it just goes to show that the fact that the league, you know, basically didn't accept the original form of it and sent it back to them and said, rework this before we approve it. I mean, and it took them, you know, another 6 to 7 hours before they finally got it sorted out. But I mean, it showed at least the willingness, you know, especially on the part of the Senators and the Penguins to get this done. You know, I mean, the Senators wanted to sell, but they wanted to get some good assets back. You know, the Penguins really wanted to get Broussard because Rutherford really wanted to bolster his depth at center. So then you bring in somebody like, you know, George McPhee there in Vegas, who's got the cap space. And, you know, yeah, you bring in, you get yourself a player, you get yourself an additional, you know, fourth round pick. You know, for a team that basically, you know, this is a guy who's trying to stockpile assets here too. So at the end of the day, yeah, you're willing to do that. You know, you're willing to take on some of that salary and do that. And it's only for another season after this. So, you know, yeah, they were able to make it work this time. So I know that people are going to look at this and they're going to point to, I don't know, maybe you'll be touching on this a little later on the segment, the whole Erik Karlsson speculation, but maybe they'll look at that and go, you know, hey, maybe we could do the same thing to make that go off, but we'll see.
Yeah, we're not calling this podcast foreshadowing or anything. But
no.
Might be somewhere along the line. So there was.
Just in case you're interested, by the way, latest thing on my Twitter feed regarding Karlsson, from Brian Wild. Covers Habs stuff. Scuttlebutt as Vegas is in on Karlsson. All those picks McPhee loaded up on could push the envelope enough to land the Golden Knights an expansion team to a cup favorite. That's the craziest story. Yes, I agree. Moving on.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times. So it's kind
yeah,
of like,
I've seen Vegas thrown in there too. Listen, it's interesting, but
it makes for good clicks.
Well, it could go off if Vegas is becoming the third team again, and they're the conduit by which the Senators could route Karlsson through to Tampa Bay, but
you could technically go to Vegas for a cup of coffee. Literally,
that's what I'm saying. You're just passing through, as we say. You know, passing through,
just like Mark Letestu earlier today. Just
yeah. same sort of deal. Again, that's another 13 traits. So I was wrong. That's the fourth one, actually.
Yep.
Broussard was the third one. Lateste used the fourth one, yeah.
Fourth one. And yep. That was another just plain, odd sort of... By the way, the Rangers have just benefited from like their 364th challenge goalie interference. And,
well
and
done.
I think at least 363 has gone for them. So
yeah, but just getting back really quickly though, you mentioned the Lateste trade where yeah he was dealt by the Oilers to the Predators for Pontus Åberg and then got flipped to the Blue Jackets for draft pick.
Yeah.
I think David Poile, GM of the Preds, he's setting the stage here. You know, that move, bringing in, you know, he bring in prospects, and then earlier he makes that move, I believe it was with the Sharks earlier today. Yeah, where he brought in, you know, Bullig and Groznik from the Sharks. Again, two guys that they're not going to play with the Predators. They're going to be in the Preds minor league system to the end of the season, and then they'll be called up for the playoffs, as we know. Just, you know, they'll be part of the Black Aces for the playoffs. But I think Poile is setting the table for a bigger move, and I think that move's coming tomorrow. And we know... He's looking for a. It's no secret he's looking for a top six winger. Now, of course, he's not come right out and said that, but he's more or less implied it, and most insiders are saying, yeah, that's what he's going to do. So I think that maybe he's looking at either Evander Kane in Buffalo, or maybe he's looking at Max Pacioretty in Montreal, or. Maybe he's looking at Mike Hoffman in Ottawa, because Ottawa, big time, is in sell mode, as we both know. So I think one of those three, I think, is going to end up in Nashville by the trade deadline. And if I was a bet man, I'd say it'd probably be Evander Kane.
It just seems like it could make a good bit of sense. And, of course, it wouldn't help for Evander Kane to have somebody of a role model like P.K. Subban. Guide him along, so to speak.
I think, to be honest,
Evander Kane's had his moments.
Yeah, but Evander Kane has really cleaned up his act, though.
Yeah, he
really
has
cleaned up his act since the summer.
And you have to give him a lot of credit for it, because I mean, for a while it was pretty bad. I mean, but it was getting towards that point where it's like,
but I think he realized. You know, that, yeah, his career was in jeopardy if he didn't clean up his act. So, yeah, as I said, it would not surprise me, because apparently the latest, well, I shouldn't say the latest, but this is it's a few hours old, but apparently, according to TSN's Frank Saravalli, five teams are serious about Evander Kane. So that's why, and that's why I'm looking at Nashville, and I'm thinking, yeah, there. Because the Preds got the taste of being very close to the Cup last year, and they want to go all the way this year. They want to go back, and this time they want to win it all. So that's why I think that, yeah, with the moves we saw David Poile making today, people are like, well, what's he doing? He's just really just, you know, he takes Lateste.
Clearing the cover.
You know, why is he doing that? He's setting the table for the bigger moves. That's what he's doing for the big move that's coming tomorrow. Or could come tonight, for all we know.
But yeah.
I'm hoping he waits till tomorrow.
No, tomorrow. I do not. I never want to see a trade. I never want to see another Eric Johnson, Kevin Shattenkirk trade.
Oh, God. I know.
Real fast before we get into the third big trade so far in this 2017-2018 trade deadline. The 1:21 in the morning Eastern time trade that sent Kevin Shattenkirk for Eric Johnson, basically. The St. Louis, Colorado trade that literally had people going nuts.
That one, yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
The biggest problem with that trade was literally it had been sworn up and down that about 6, 7 o'clock Eastern that night that this trade was imminent. It was imminent.
Yep, I remember.
They waited till the final West Coast game ended at about 10 after 1 Eastern time. And all of a sudden, Bob McKenzie comes out. I guess he must have taken a nap, rubbed his eyes. there's a pending trade call from St. Louis, and people are just like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And I remember sitting there, and I think even then, I was on Twitter, and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually happening.
Yeah.
I'm still going to sleep.
No.
You know, it's like I wrote up the piece for Fantasy Impact in the morning, and it's just like, okay, fair enough. But
yeah,
we're hoping that nothing like that happens.
See, if I can say real quick, I mean that's one reason why I kind of wish I still lived in Alaska. When I first started doing this, when I first started up Spectres Hockey 20 years ago, I was living in Alaska at the time, and because of that, you know. I was like, I'm like 4 or 5 hours, I believe, behind Eastern time. So, you know, it was great both for watching playoff games that went to triple overtime, because they were still early evening games for me. And it was great for, if a late night trade happened, like, for example, when the Colorado Avalanche acquired Rob Blake. If you think about that one back in the day. You know, that one came down the pipe, I think, at 10 o'clock in the evening my time, which was like, oh, okay, that's fine. Great. Da, 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 da. And I'm sure if there had been Twitter back then, I would have been hearing like a lot of screaming on Twitter from people who lived in the Eastern time zone going, no, you're killing me.
That. Anything but that. But, geez, I mean, obviously, you know, we segue right into we joked about the Rangers getting a few gifts this evening, or at least one. They got a few more actually earlier today. Or it depends on who, you know, which side of the coin you believe more. As Boston had been hell bent on a few Ranger players, and then finally managed to Tom Sweeney managed to get it settled down, and wound up trading for Rick Nash this afternoon. You know, the haul for the Rangers is significant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, the 2019 seventh round pick is just that's nice and cute and stuff. Obviously, there's Matt Beleski, who Boston finally, we know, the contract of death, that it looked so promising, and then it went so horribly south. Well, eventually. Ryan Lindgren, a pretty good prospect, who has a solid amount of promise, at least. And then I would say the enigmatic Ryan Spooner, who could be a 50-60 point player in this league and could also be out of the league in 2 years. You know, obviously, at the first round pick, you had the salary retention of Rick Nash and the salary retention of Matt Beleski, which more or less washed out.
Yep.
So, amusingly, TSN and a few of the other sites don't even really mention it because, again, you know, it's a total washout. And the first thing at first I'm sitting there and going, oh my God, this is Jaromir Jagr 2.0. There's this little part of me that sat there and went, okay, you know, he's going to be really good during the regular season. And then at some point in the playoffs, he's just going to disappear. And that may ultimately happen, but at least so far from it was kind of a rush type of day for Rick Nash. I understand that. And then he's playing in Buffalo early this evening, which can't be fun necessarily for anybody, considering he had basically been in limbo for the better part of 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. Not the best thing to happen, but, yeah, but you know, we talked about it before the show. I like this deal for both clubs because you know the Bruins, Don Sweeney's decided. Yeah, you know, my team's considered a cup contender. Well, I'm going to bring them in a little bit of extra help here, you know, to maybe put them over the top or at least give them a really good shot. And I think with Rick Nash, that's a good addition to do. You know, he's not the scorer that he once was, but I mean, still, he's a good size. He will skate on, I believe he was on their second line starting tonight. And once he gets his legs underneath him, gets adjusted to his new teammates and his new surroundings, I think he'll be a good addition, a good rental player for them as they, try and, make a run for the cup this year. But I like the fact too, that, listen, they were able to move, half of Bilecki's cap hit. They kept 1.9 mil and gave the Rangers the other half of that. They had the prospects that they were willing to give up without having to move any good young players from their roster. You know, they didn't have to give up, you know, anybody like a, you know, Charlie McAvoy or Brandon Carlo, anybody like that, you know, excuse me. They were able to keep them. And, you know, for the Rangers, I mean, they got it, you know, they're rebuilding and they got themselves a good haul. I mean, listen, Bilecki, he can play in the minors and, you know, that way if you have to, it's only 1.9 mil of a cap hit that you're having to bury. So, you know, it frees up additional room, no harm, no foul. Spooner, he's been inconsistent. You know, maybe he can sort of regain some measure of consistency there, you know, with a new team. But it's the prospect. It's getting Ryan Lindgren, who's a young defenseman with the University of Minnesota. I've heard a lot of good things about him, so he could turn into a quality top four defenseman down the road for the Rangers. But they also get a first round pick, so they now have. They now have two picks in each of the first three rounds of this year's draft. So if you're going to rebuild, that's a heck of a way to, that's a heck of a foundation to start from, is from there. And who knows, the Rangers might not be done. There was some speculation maybe they might flip Spooner, but he's in the lineup tonight, so I have a feeling that they're probably going to hang on to him. But, you know, perhaps there's other, you know, maybe one other player they can move. I mean, hey, we heard Ryan McDonough's name come up. We've heard Matt Zuccarello's name come up. Maybe one of those guys gets moved as well, and they can bring in some more youth to start rebuilding. But I think for what both teams wanted, this trade, you know, works out. For short term, yeah, obviously for the Bruins, but, you know, there's some real good potential here for the Rangers in the long term.
Yeah, it must be nice to have six picks in the first three rounds. Oh, wait.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I remember those days at New Jersey even where, you know.
Yeah, and this year's draft is supposedly not too bad, so, you know.
This might be something that's extremely helpful for the Rangers in there. And I can't call it a rebuild, Lyle. I just can't. Too many years of knowing the Rangers and having this like sneaky feeling that just when it looks like they're going to sell something, and even in previous deadlines when they kind of went lateral and you went, oh, well, maybe they are. And then magically they sign up two or three big free agents and you just go.
Maybe we'll just call it retooling.
Retool. We'll call it,
there you go.
We'll
it's,
call
a
it retool.
Retool, yeah. It's a retool. It's a retool. Maybe they'll you know, maybe you know, who knows? Maybe they might even use maybe a couple of those picks, and they'll trade them to bring in another good young player to jumpstart things too. So you can't rule that out.
Anything is possible, which means it could actually happen. And for people that kind of lampooned and hammered on this deadline a little bit, when you go back and look on it as a whole, it's been really active. I know it's had that look where it looked a little convoluted, but you know, when we take a look at this next week and go back and just look at all the trades that actually were made and go, mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Pretty active.
Yeah, and listen, there's still some quality names still on the board here. You know, I mean, yeah, sure. You know, sure, Rick Nash is gone, and Thomas Pokanić got dealt today to the Leafs. A good haul, by the way, for Montreal as well. Marc Bergevin, the GM there, caught a lot of grief this year from Habs fans, but you know, he got a decent return for Pokanić there. You got a second round pick, which gives him four in this year's draft. So
wow.
that's pretty darn good. Plus, you know, a couple of young players that, you know, maybe they won't crack the lineup this year, but I mean, at least they can fill gaps in the farm system while they call up some of their younger prospects over the remainder of the season to see how they're going to play out. So, not bad move there. But you know, you look at some of the names that are still out there on the list. I mean, in terms of unrestricted free agents, I mean, Evander Kane's still out there. Patrick Maroon's still available. Mike Green is still available. Thomas Vanek is still available. Jack Johnson's still available. I mean, those just as unrestricted free agents, those are some decent names out there. Heading into, they are, hopefully they'll still be there heading into tomorrow. But we also have guys that, you know, still have term on their contracts who've been in rumors, you know, the rumor mill quite a bit. You know, such as, I mean, Mike Hoffman with the Senators, Matt Zuccarello with the Rangers, Ryan McDonough with the Rangers, and of course, Ottawa's Erik Karlsson, who, you know, jumped to the top of everybody's trade board in the past week because there's all kinds of talk saying that maybe he goes to Tampa Bay in a complex, convoluted deal. So lots of names on the board still heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, there's a lot to this. And obviously the one trade that we kind of alluded to before the quote-unquote big four was this. Obviously the Peter Mrazek trade for the not-so-rare double conditional pick, which seems to happen every year, but usually it's a conditional pick for a conditional pick. Those are those 335, oh, wait, it somehow made it in type of trade. Usually it's not a player for two conditional picks. And the one part of the conditional pick is comical. I think all he has to do is play, like, start five games. I mean, it's like, why have this in as and yet it was in there as part of the trade. You know, one of the conditional picks was, start five games. Okay. No problem. I think that's kind of a given, you know, considering – one goalie is out for a month, and the other is out 5 to 6 weeks. I mean,
well, yeah, and that's a sad thing too. I mean, for the Flyers, they could have had Mrazek for a third round pick the week before.
That's it. Yep.
But Hextall said no because, of course, by that point Neuwirth was back playing. They knew Elliott was going to be out for a while, but we got Neuwirth back, so he was content to go with that. But after Neuwirth went down, he had no choice. He had to give his team at least a decent or at least an experienced NHL goaltender to throw in there, because if he didn't, you're basically throwing away a great opportunity to make the playoffs. Because they're already – this morning, they were sitting third in the Met, the Flyers. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, you've got to give that team a chance. So, yeah, he had to make that move.
Yeah, and considering the top – you know, the top four teams are separated by about, what, 4 or 5 points? I mean –
yeah, not even. I think it was three or four. Not very much.
Devils
it wasn't much
Devils
distance.
Devils have 72.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the top two, I think Pittsburgh has 76. Damn,
yeah.
I hate doing math.
They're not that far away. They're not that far apart. You know,
okay,
let's have a look here.
So
okay,
five,
Capital
five,
77,
five.
Flyers 76,
six.
And Penguins 76. So, yeah, you know. You have to make that move, you know. And as it turned out, it was a good move to make because Mrazek, so far, looks pretty good as a Flyer, so far.
He looks calm and poised like he had for most of the last month in Detroit, to be fair, before, you know, some of the more injuries happened and then the chaos with who's going to be traded and who isn't. So that's pretty much the quote-unquote big five, or the big four plus the medium one. that some have talked about. Now it gets into the more fun part, and the purely speculative and not the HF boards version like we had last week. For those listening in, and we put the link on it hours before I even scheduled the show today, to be honest. So I sat there. My rationale for this was, okay, you have to laugh at some of these. And
yeah.
And Timmy and I went through about 11 pages of HF boards, which you have to have a very strong constitution to be able to go through the trade rumor thread on HF boards and survive. People laugh about this, but it really is true. You will find some of the more the old Eklund rumor generator has nothing on HF boards for perspective. That's all that people have to know. And it was meant to do it in a way of we're contrasting the lighthearted with what is going on now, which is literally, basically a little less than 18 hours until pencils down, or in this case, you know, computers off and phones off as well. It's really weird because the old days of the trade deadline, it literally was like, you know, write this down, you know, telegraph, telephone this, and you know, the trade would go through. So much has changed. So, of course, I have to go through TSN's version of this only because it may be more fun. The dear old trade bait, ladies and gentlemen, which is not geo-blocked anymore for me because we've found ways around this. God bless technology and the fact that, oh yes, by the way, TSN's Trade Center will be broadcast on ESPN3 or Watch Now or whatever ESPN wants to call it, streaming all day tomorrow, and it will be on ESPN2 from 2 to 4 o'clock, people in the United States. So there is no excuse to watch or find a way to stream it or et cetera, unless your company has really bad Wi-Fi or blocks these sites, which is sadly also a possibility. So there are at least more options, and worst comes to worst, there is Twitter, which most companies do not block. And people like Lyle and myself will try to keep as many informed as we can as the day goes on. Just don't expect anything before 9 o'clock a.m. It's not gonna happen this time. There will be no 8 o'clock trades like 8 years ago when somebody thought it would be funny to do that. And silly East Coast guys. All right. Now, according to TSN, this is their top 10 right now, which makes a lot of sense. Of course, everybody's going to have Erik Karlsson number one because it generates the most clicks. It has intrigue beyond belief. Mm-hmm. More intrigue, and more intrigue.
Yeah.
And plenty of teams are involved. Ryan McDonagh jumps only because, well, now Rick Nash is gone. So the only big piece left in New York to trade, unless Jeff Gordon somehow throws a curveball between now and 1 p.m. tomorrow. The key for this, for those that don't know, the Rangers are heading out west. Their flight leaves at 1 o'clock. So more than likely, a trade from the Rangers has to happen or at least be somewhat consummated at or before 1 o'clock. That's the going theory, even with 21st century technology. It's not like Jeff Gordon's going to get on the plane phone and phone it in. You think. Again, stranger things have happened. Mike Green was held out tonight. On the bright side, for people that were worried that he would definitely not get dealt, that's not the case. He is more or less healthy from yet another injury.
Yeah.
And he is very much in play. Obviously, we talked about Andrew Kane. He's fourth. Patrick Maroon was held out tonight after them hemming and hawing for about 3 hours as to whether he would play. Surprisingly enough, Zach Smith, more because of his cap hit than anything else, is up there. Matt Zuccarello has been very lightly mentioned, but we'll get into him in a little bit of why probably something that doesn't look too likely. Mike Hoffman, who I think should be higher on this list than eighth, but Mike Hoffman is almost becoming the Tomas Cabrera Lyle of the NHL trade deadline. Getting close, like another couple more, and I think he's there.
Yeah.
But, we'll see there. Jack Johnson, will he or won't he sign with Columbus, or will he or won't he be traded, or will he ask for a trade and then back out of it one more time before 3 p.m. tomorrow? Is nine. And Thomas Vanek is 10th.
Yeah, round Vanek.
Vanek, the ultimate home warrior, if you will. And then obviously you go down the list a little bit more.
Well, yeah.
There's Ian Cole, who's no.
Most of those on those lists, once you get beyond the top 10, the unrestricted free agents will go, but most of that, but the top 10 guys are the ones everybody's interested in. So, most of the guys that are lower down on the list, I don't believe any of them are going anywhere.
There was one that was kind of interesting, I would say about 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
And now since San Jose's, his last five starts haven't gone very well.
No. Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. That's Aaron Dell.
Yeah,
and
that was one that was, it was really hot and heavy for a few weeks there, and then it just died.
But see, I never put any stock into that, though, because when Martin Jones was not playing well, they needed Aaron Dell, and he played very well. Now, you know, Martin Jones is playing better. Now Aaron Dell's struggling. But the point is, I never saw them giving up Dell at all, because you need to have that insurance there. Best to have the two right. goals in the one. And, yes, well, they need to say, well, you know, honestly, I think we've seen the only move that Doug Wilson, the GM of the Sharks, is going to make, and that was when he acquired Eric Fair. Now, people are going to laugh and go, oh, well, gee, you know, that's nothing. It's like, no, he doesn't want to give up a lot of that. You know, he really doesn't want to give up his young assets, his young players, because he's being patient with them. And he wants to keep cap space available, because this summer he's going to be one of the suitors for John Tavares if he hits the free agent market. And if Tavares does not hit the free agent market, then you know he's going to be busy looking at other free agent options. So he's going to keep that cap space open. So honestly, I don't think that the Sharks are going to be making any more trades. If Wilson does make another trade, it'll be another minor deal. It won't be for any of the heavy hitters. Certainly won't be for any of the top 10 on that list. I know people mentioned yesterday that Doug Wilson called the Senators to inquire about Erik Karlsson, but he's not bringing in Erik Karlsson. You know, he's inquiring to see if he can be a third team involved in a trade with Erik Karlsson. In other words, he wants to bring in some assets, if he can do it, and kind of be, if you will, a conduit by which, say, Karlsson goes from Ottawa to, say, the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is who he's been linked to the most in the past week. So I could see Wilson getting involved that way, but he's already got Brent Burns on his defense. He's already got Marc-Edouard Vlasic on his defense. The two of them, total contracts combined, is $120 million. He is not going to bring in Erik Karlsson. He can't afford to.
He might do the Josh Levo for a conditional seventh-round pick.
That I can see. Yes, excellent
yeah,
point.
Excellent point, Chris.
I could see that.
There's a couple of little ones.
Yes, but not, no. He's not going after any of the big names. No. Not happening.
I can see that. I mean, there's been a few names that were tossed around even today. Jean-Gabriel Pageau.
Honestly, since they traded Broussard, I don't see Pageau going.
Yeah, that was the one. It's like, you know, it's kind of funny about Friday. I was talking to Eric Engels, and he's like, "Yeah, what if he went to Montreal?" And it's like, "Yeah, but who would he score on?" I mean, it's kind of the running joke. All right, New Jersey, to be fair, that would be the second team, and Pittsburgh would be the third team that he often scores against. So okay, but still, I mean, you eliminate Montreal, that's a third of his scoring right there.
Like I said, they moved Broussard, who is one of their main centers. You don't want to move another center out, you know? I mean, you just need to look at Montreal. You mentioned Montreal. Look at Montreal. No centers. They have even fewer centers now they traded Thomas Pekanic to Toronto for the rest of the season. So there's no way Ottawa is going to turn around and go, you know what, yeah, let's move Pageau too. No, they're keeping Pageau.
Yeah, there's definitely something to some of these things. Okay, but now, the fun part in all of this is, this is not medieval rapid fire. This is not a test, because we get the nature of the beast of this business is you're going to get more wrong than you are right. This is graded on a curve in a significant one. However, our goal is to get more than 3% of these right so that we're above other rumor sites. Nobody wants to be below 3%. Now, obviously, I'm with you, Lyle. I don't believe Erik Karlsson is moving.
No, he's not moving.
I can't see it. I could see it.
It's too complex. We talked about it before the show went on. It's just too complex. You know,
this trade could involve as many as 7 pieces and 4 teams.
Yeah. Well, Bob McKenzie at TSN, I mean, he said yesterday that Erik Karlsson was more likely not to be traded at the deadline, you know. And the reason why is, you know, first of all, the Senators, if they're going, we talked about it before, Chris, if the Senators are going to move him, they want to get 5, 6, or 7 pieces back. They have to get significant assets. And that's not just first-round draft picks, not just top prospects. They're going to be part of it. But they are going to want one or two good young roster players as part of the deal. They're going to want that. And if you're not willing to give up a roster player, you're not going to get them. And he's been linked to Tampa Bay, who has and Steve Yzerman, the GM of the Lightning, he has plenty of top prospects, plenty of draft picks he could part with, but he doesn't want to part with anyone from his roster. He's made that clear. Now, unless he's willing to move off of that, who's he going to give up? Is he going to give up Braden Point? No, absolutely not. Yanni Gord? I don't see him giving that up. Nemesnikov? Maybe, but is that a player that Ottawa would want? So, you know, there's that part of it. There's also, you got to make the dollars fit because Carlson is signed through next season. He's making $6.5 million a season. So there's his cap hit that's going to be taken into account. But the Senators also want to get Bobby Ryan included in the deal too. So they want to try and move both guys. And there's just no way that that's going to fit with Tampa Bay unless somebody's picking up some dollars somewhere. And if you want Carlson to end up in Tampa Bay, well, then somebody's going to have to send a young player to Ottawa as part of the deal. And it's just so complex right now. I mean, we thought the Brassard trade on Friday was complicated. And remember, as you said, that one got bounced. In its initial form, it got rejected by the league. They had to go back and rework it before it was finally approved. This one is so complicated, I honestly don't think these teams can get it done at the deadline. It's possible, but I think it's a long shot. I think this is the kind of deal that you make in the off season when you have teams that are more willing to make deals, that have more cap space. You know, they're more willing to discuss these kind of transactions. At this time, I'm not saying that, you know, yeah, that the Lightning aren't interested. I'm not saying the Senators aren't trying to move him, but I just don't think there's a deal there that can suitably address everybody's needs right now.
Yeah, and I think more for me it's the old adage of it cannot – there's just too much of a chance that it cannot get done by 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I think they're going to run out of runway here. Yeah,
I think some team gets really close, and you hear like you'll even see maybe one or two failed trade proposals for Erik Karlsson, and you don't want to laugh at it too much, but it's really a case of that could be a reality where you see at least one, if not two, scenarios that come out. It's almost like the old Law of Toronto arbitration cases, where that have suddenly popped up on Twitter in the past week because of some person, maybe named me, who said these look like too much like something that people like Glenn Sather and such would use in an actual arbitration case. But that's for another time, as they say. Obviously, again, you know, Carlson's the big fish if he actually does go.
Mm-hmm.
But on the bright side, for attention NHL shoppers, or I should say attention NHL GMs that are buying, there is fortunately other talent out there that can be had for less moving parts.
Yeah.
One of them obviously being Ryan McDonagh right underneath him, which...
Mm-hmm.
I heard somewhere that he was not at the John Rattel retirement ceremony tonight, which is interesting in of itself, considering of he's a captain and all of the team.
I can't speak to that. I mean, you'd have more insight in that than I would.
Yeah, that seems a little bit odd in of itself. But again, this is the kind of thing that, unfortunately, for better or for worse, when you're dealing with the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Speculation that can lead to actually something that sometimes happens, and sometimes it's just a load
it's
of
just
hogwash.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in McDonagh's case, I mean, yeah, he would be much more affordable for a team like the Lightning to acquire than Erik Karlsson would be. It's still going to cost you, you know. I mean, but that could be a trade, because we saw what the Rangers got for Bobby Ryan, And they did, or Bobby, sorry, we saw what the, don't want to get through, throw people off. We saw what the Rangers got for Rick Nash. And that, there was at least, there was one roster player involved, and that was Ryan Spooner. So I would think if you're going to get, you know, if you're going to go after McDonough, who has another season left on his contract, and I think has more trade value than a Rick Nash does right now, then I don't see how that deal gets done unless you give up a roster player. So, again, that could be one where you got to bring a third team in. But that being said, that would be, I think, a lot less convoluted and complex than, say, an Erik Karlsson three-team deal.
That's way less complex.
Yeah.
So it's on the sort of Derek Brassard level of complexity.
Yeah, yeah, I would say it's probably on there. Yeah.
Yes, we've hit the part of the NHL trade deadline in the 2017-18 season where we are now talking about levels of complexity among three teams, which is something that you would never have thought about even last year.
Well, that's what the salary cap does. You know, it forces general manager. It doesn't mean the general managers are getting smarter. You're still going to see dumb trades and dumb moves getting made, but at least you're seeing them becoming more creative.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that you have to look at when you're
For better or for worse, but they're getting more creative.
Hey, I like it personally just because I remember the old days of, hey, let's trade the rights of so and so. That's never
good. Yeah.
The Nick Antropov trade. The devil, the rights of Nick Antropov for, you know, a conditional 7-round pick just to.
Yeah. Well, and it does create it does make going into the trade deadline a lot more interesting. It provides more interest than just, you know, and for this year, I mean, again, God forbid, let's hope that no big trades go off tonight. There's going to be a lot of notable names still available going into the trade deadline show tomorrow. So if you're watching it on TSN, you don't have to watch James Duthie sitting there and the panel trying to, you know, talk up how great a third line checking forward or a bottom six defenseman or backup goaltender is going to be to a playoff contender, you know, for 4 hours, because there'll be some bigger, more notable names to discuss and maybe some more actual interesting trades to pull off.
And people won't have to worry if Jay and Dan are going to make a mountain of peanut butter out of 50 jars of Skippy. Things like that, you know, I think that was the 2010 trade deadline, literally, where they sat there and, like, nothing happened for, like, 5 hours.
Ugh.
And then at 2 p.m., finally, things broke, and it went on to be actually not a great trade deadline, but something at least. But, yeah, this is the kind of one you stare and go, this could be active enough at least.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Patrick Maroon is extremely affordable right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be gone. He's gone for sure, too. It's just a matter of figuring out. I mean, you know, I've heard him linked to St. Louis. Heard him linked to Winnipeg as well as an option. So, I mean, and, hey, maybe even he goes to Nashville, too. He could be a fit there, too, as well. But he's definitely a goner. He's going to be on his way out. I will be shocked if he's still in an Oilers jersey after 3 p.m. tomorrow.
Now, do you think Doug Armstrong, after watching today's debacle in Nashville, and look, it's been a tough month to 6 weeks for St. Louis.
This has been a real rough patch. I know he doesn't want to. He says he doesn't want to give up assets for rental players, and I totally dig where he's coming from here. You're trying to think long term. You've got good young players on your team. You're trying to build something up. And I do think that he's sincere about that. I think he really would prefer going after somebody who has term left on his contract, somebody like a Mike Hoffman, somebody like a Max Pacioretty, guys like that. But he might not have any choice, you know, because his team's in real trouble right now. This is a club that, you know, up until a few weeks ago, I mean, they looked like a lock for the playoffs. And now, if you're a Blues fan, you've got to be very concerned with what you're seeing. You know, especially these last six games, they've been just horrible. So, you know, you got to figure that Doug Armstrong's going to be working the phones big time, and he may have to bring in a rental player if there's no other suitable options out there.
Yeah, these numbers are pretty overwhelming. They've dropped from second in the West to ninth in the span of the last six plus weeks.
Yeah.
Jake Allen is 2-13 in the last 15 starts. Now,
how's Carter Hutt-Megan out? Yeah, is he coming back down to earth? It seems to be.
He's come back down to earth himself.
Yeah.
Now here's the problem. St. Louis has scored a grand total of 16 goals in those 13 losses that Jake Allen has absorbed. So if you have really rough math, kids, that's about 1.2 goals per game.
They're scoring worse. They're worse than Montreal right now.
They are actually since December 1st, they are worse than Montreal.
Yeah.
Goals per 60.
Yeah, because Montreal is horrible this year. But yeah, and they shouldn't be that way. With the talent they have on that team, they should not be that way. Not the Blues. They shouldn't be that way. Any team that's got a sniper like Tarasenko, you know, where you've got a good setup guy there like Braden Schenn. I mean, yeah, I realize, you know, Jaden Schwartz was out for a while, but he's back now in the lineup. You know, I mean, they have the talent there. You know, and they've got, you know, a pretty decent defense core there. I mean, it's anchored by Alex Pietrangelo. Again, I know they've got a couple of guys out that are injured. Joel Edmondson's out. Roberto Bertuzzo's out. But there's still enough depth of talent on that team. They should be better than they are. They really should.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Meester's been a little bit banged up. But, I mean, he doesn't produce much offensively anyway.
Now here's
the killer in all this. And I went looking through this real fast. Other than the fact that Martin Brodeur might not have a job next year, just because his contract does end, and I'm just throwing it out there, there is hope, New Jersey. He may come home. There really is.
Could be some changes. Could be.
If this continues in St. Louis, I don't know that he stays aboard. It's really, he doesn't like losing. I talked to him last night. He's just that type of guy. He just does not like losing.
No.
All right. So Vladimir Tarasenko over the last 2 months, basically, has a grand total of 8 goals. That's it.
Yeah.
So he has eight goals over the last 22 games.
Yeah, that should tell you.
Now, for most goal scorers, that's not that bad. But
for him, that's horrible.
But for those in the know, that breaks down to a pace of 29 goals over an 82-game season.
Yeah, this is a guy who's flirted with 40 goals in each of the last three seasons.
That'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Alex Pietrangelo, I think, has 5 points in his last 20 games.
Alex Pietrangelo, up until about a month ago, was everybody's odds-on favorite for the Norris Trophy this year.
Yep.
He's not that anymore.
It has gone away.
Yeah.
Needless to say. And obviously he's not the only person, but if you go through, I mean, there's a clear demarcation line, basically, over the last 11 games a while. He has 2 points. That's it.
They've had injuries. I know they've been banged up, but you know, good teams find a way. And this leads me to wonder too. You know, is Mike Yeo the guy, the right coach for this team? Because this is so reminiscent of what you used to see with him in Minnesota.
Yep.
So, you know, is this part of it too? I mean, I'm not trying to badmouth the guy, but, you know, you look at those Minnesota teams that he coached, and then you look at what the Blues are doing now, and it's eerily similar. And those Minnesota teams, you looked at them and went, geez, they should be better than this, you know?
Hey, could you remember how many nights particularly Yo's last season, where you'd sit there and go, okay, possession metrics, almost 60%, out-shooting opponent, 2-1, sometimes more. Lost. I mean, they lost like four. I still remember stretch. They lost 4 straight at home, out shooting opponents. I think it was something insane, like 163 to like 85. We were just like, what? It's like, you know, you're sitting there, you're looking at the rough math. It's like 19 per game. You're out shooting somebody.
Now, sometimes you can call that just a stretch of bad luck, because it does happen. Sometimes
right.
it legitimately is bad luck.
And then it
but,
just kept going.
But after a while, you go, man, it's more. This is more than just we're not getting the bounces, you know.
Yeah, this is definitely, you know, it's an extremely rough stretch for Peter Angelo. Who,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Look, I mean, you know, he had a little bit of a slump right towards New Year, right around, I would say, just after New Year's, where he,
mm-hmm.
he had three games where he just looked awful, and you kind of like, oh, you know, are the wheels falling off a little bit? You know, and then he, you know, he did his
mm-hmm.
kind of thing where he reeled off points in six or seven games, and he went, all right, now he looks kind of normal again. He even had a really nice performance against Toronto, where even though he only had an assist, he had six shots on 10 attempted, and you went, okay, you know, kind of looking good. But this team cannot score goals.
No.
I mean, Braden Schenn. Where is Braden Schenn?
Where's the guy who was on fire in the first half of the season?
30 points in like the first 24 games. And the funny part is this: by no stretch of the imagination is he having a bad season. He has 55 points in 62 games.
Yeah,
it's not as if you know, he completely dud it and say went. I don't know. Best way I could describe this. First half, Nick Lidstrom, where he had 9 points in 42 games 1 year. And
mm-hmm.
people are just like, what happened? This is a little bit different. Now, it's funny because Shen's case is a little bit more curious. He's had games where he's been really good, and they've just gone kind of under the radar. But the last two games in particular against San Jose – and then against Winnipeg, he was virtually invisible. I mean, he played 22 minutes against San Jose and did nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing, unfortunately, that is happening with St. Louis. They are not getting it. And depth scoring, forget it. Depth scoring's always been a problem for St. Louis.
Yeah.
Through the years, pretty much.
Yeah.
And this year, especially in the last 15 games or so, it's the New Jersey Devils from 2010 have called and said, hey, we're not even that bad.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks a lot of volumes. And that's why people are sitting there going, oh, maybe St. Louis should just do much about nothing and say, forget it. You know, go into the summer, try to improve that way. There's no real sense of why bother if there's no lock that they're making the playoffs. They're ninth in the West right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're plummeting quickly. Not saying that they're not going to sell. No, they're certainly not going to do that. But they're not exactly buyers at this point either.
No.
And it's a shame because that would have made the West that much more I mean, look, the West as it is, it's going to take almost 95 points to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Whereas the cushy
East, very,
you know, you can sneak in a little less.
Yeah.
Okay. 7 points left. So that's going to play a role in it, too.
Yeah. Listen, Chris, I hate to cut this short, but
yeah.
I've got some things I got to take care of here on a personal level here. So I'm going to have to book
Absolutely.
Out. I'm going to have to tap out, bud.
Sounds very good. As always, thank you very much, Lyle, for
Oh, Chris, out. Hey, listen, it was my pleasure. And like I said, all the best, you know, to your better half. And as we discussed earlier, you know, send along my best, you know, and hope things go well. And you know, hope that you have an enjoyable trade deadline, as I'm sure you will, as I'm sure we both will. We're going to have a lot of fun, you know, when the dust settles, just looking at everything going, wow. You know, either wow, that happened, or went pretty much as I expected.
Exactly. All right, Lyle, you have a good one, and I'll see you on the other side tomorrow.
All right, Chris, take care.
That indeed was Lyle Richardson of Spectres Hockey. You can catch him on you know, his site, spectreshockey.com, of course, writing for the Sporting News, my NHL trade rumors, and contributing to a host of other sites, and of course, on Twitter, at Spectres Hockey. Folks, again, much thanks for everybody that tuned and listened in tonight. We had a lot of fun going through the latest of trades and trade deadlines, innuendos and rumors and such. It's going to be a good bit of chaotic fun tomorrow in its own way. There's going to be the period of quietness that just infuriates a lot of people, unfortunately. And then there's going to be times where you just can't keep up with it all. Whether those are small, medium, or large blockbuster trades, nobody really knows. But nonetheless, we will have it covered tomorrow via Twitter, again, via my NHL trade rumors. And the goal will be to do some kind of recap in some way, shape, or form, so that we can keep everybody ready and informed and try to go and sort through all the scuttlebutt and try to figure out what's BS and what might have some legs tomorrow. Because let's face it, there's going to be a lot of sensory overload for a person that particularly is following, say, the TSN Trade Center at times tomorrow, at times. Again, the things that we keep in mind are, hey, West Coast people wake up at a certain time, so you won't see things pick up from there till about 11 a.m., 11:30 Eastern, sometimes noon, because they're literally, again, hey, they're getting up, getting ready, getting things out and such, and they don't have much time. That's something that we often look at here on the show, and obviously on Twitter and such. Now, what expectations are there tomorrow of trades? Good question. Like we said, there's been about 14, 15 trades this week alone. If you include the FNIF trade, there's been 15 trades of some significance since mid-February. That's basically the last 10 days or so. Is 15 trades tomorrow a reasonable number? It might be a hair higher, it might be a hair lower. It really just depends on how many of these big guys, actually bigger top 10 guys on TSN Straight Bait and other sites go. But does Kane go tomorrow? Maybe something surprises. Does McDonough go early tomorrow? Again, I don't know. Does somehow a Pacioretty go, even though those chances are decreasing? Would a Max Domi go somewhere? Again, low chance there as well. That's the question. Ian Cole doesn't seem like he's as likely to go either. So the deck is reshuffling a little bit. Andrew Shaw doesn't seem like he's going anywhere either. Robbie Fabry had been talked about, but that's a question mark. Johnny Oduya cleared waivers. Is there something there? I don't know. That's the type of thing. Does a Tommy Wingles ultimately go tomorrow? That's a possibility. You know, but these are lower level guys. Does a Blake Como go somewhere? I mean, Blake Como is a nice complimentary player that has some success. Benoit Puyo is another player. Extremely cheap cap hit. Could help a playoff team. These are the type of players that could go either very early or more towards 3 o'clock, and they get snuck in around 3:30 because of the jam-up of calls. So, again, there's a ton of speculation. A lot of it's floating around. A good bit of it is surrounding Erik Karlsson and what feels like about 60 pages worth of information on trade rumors. And if people think that that is an exaggeration, it really is not. Talking to Mark Eason and again, Lyle, today alone, over the past 3 days, it's literally been a extreme litany of rumors, innuendo, and craziness. Now, something that I've heard as well, and obviously this seems to be like the trade deadline of the three-team trade, and this is interesting in itself. There's a lot of conflicting reports on, say, a player like Evander Kane. There are some people that absolutely think he's going to move to X amount of teams and that there's X amount of teams interested. They have a number between 5 and 7. There actually may really only be 2 or 3 teams that are honestly interested in Evander Kane. So some of this may be just, you know, pushing by agent or other third party, et cetera, to try and pump up trade value. It seems like there's only a couple, few teams that are truly interested in the services of the Buffalo winger. But again, this is what we're talking about, what could happen tomorrow. Expect a lot of chaos from the tip. Most of it, again, over 90% of it, is just a boatload of chatter. And it cannot be emphasized enough. So, again, this show will be available probably sometime a little bit after midnight. Take a good listen to it. Be a lot of fun. And hope you enjoyed this. And we'll be back next week with, well, something a little bit more normal of a show with Timmy Rosenthal and possibly Ted Starkey. And we'll be going over what happened, what didn't happen. And then we'll be going over the news and notes of the NHL week. Again, until next week, Chris Wassel signing off for the program. Have a great night, everybody. And as Timmy would say, aloha.